Hey, my name is Daniel Bader, and this is the Android Central Podcast. Joining us today is the Executive Director of North America Business Development, Doug Mikow. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you here.
Thanks, Daniel. Glad to be part of it.
And helping us run this interview is Joe Mehring. Welcome back to the show.
Hello, hello. Always fun to be back on.
So, Doug, thanks for being here. I know it's a weird time. We're talking about an upcoming phone launch, and I'm guessing, like many of us, you're stuck at home. Where is home for you, by the way?
Yeah, I live in the suburbs just outside of Chicago.
Okay, and everything's going okay. You're hunkering down and doing well.
Yeah, family's doing well, and making the best of the situation. Absolutely.
Great. So I can only imagine that it's really tough to plan a product launch and do all of the logistics that go into it without actually having, you know, access to people and locations and all that stuff. And I'd love to, you know, just get a quick sense of, you know, whatever you can tell us about, you know, how this process has been planning a phone launch where, you know, you can't really have people at an event together. And what have you been doing a little bit differently than you normally would have?
Yeah, so absolutely. It starts, of course, with having just a very rigorous schedule and making sure that we meet in a very regular cadence. So typically, obviously, you have face-to-face meetings in an office. And so we try to use different platforms. At Motorola, we typically use Microsoft Teams or Skype. And so basically what we've seen is that instead of just the face-to-face meetings, we've met, you know, remotely online. And we tend to actually meet quite more often now, just because we do have the time. And there is some of the distractions, if you think about it, from work from home are gone, such as the travel. And so it did allow for us to meet a lot more frequently. And the nice thing is that everyone's schedule is it's more conducive to meeting online, and we actually get fuller participation. So there's definitely been, I would say, a lot more scheduled meetings, and both with our global partners as well as here in North America as well.
So we're talking today, of course, about the new Moto G launch, Moto G Power and Moto G Stylus. And I guess, I'll jump right in to my first question, which is, you know, there are a lot of ways to have a phone stand out in the market today. The Moto G line has always stood out for its combination of price and features and just accessibility. In the US in particular, the phones are often compatible with all of the carriers, and you just get a lot of value for money. I was really surprised to see that the sort of flagship Moto G this year, at least for the US, was a phone with a stylus. And why make that decision? It's been something that I've enjoyed using over the last little bit. But what was the thought process that went into making that the sort of the flagship Moto G of this year's generation?
Sure. But let me back up just one step before answering that question. So as you said, like, the Moto G franchise from Motorola has always been giving those aspirational features at a very affordable price point. And we're always looking at how do we challenge that? How do we push the envelope to really provide and unlock that value for consumers? And for us, each generation of products, we go through a complete evaluation. We do a lot of consumer research just to find out what are the consumer pain points, how do we, deliver more value than the competition. And we also obviously work with our retail and carrier partners in doing so. But one thing with the stylus is we had evaluated this in the past, and looking at what the options were to consumers today, we saw there's a very expensive stylus product out there. And again, with the Moto G, we're trying to see how do we bring that into a mid-tier, a very value-conscious or a smart tech shop or consumer. And so it's been an evaluation. Now, why in 2020 we're releasing the stylus? The time just seemed to be right. In the past, you've had productivity and some creativity options to use with the stylus as far as it has a very fine point. You can do calligraphy, you can do note-taking, you can do some video editing. But more so than that, what we're seeing is this whole trend with the social And it's more than just social posting a photo to, say, an application like Facebook. Or if you think about an Instagram user, it's almost impersonal if you just send someone a photo nowadays. You almost have to send a photo and you want to annotate it to say, you know, what the event was or what your feeling was at that time. And to try to do that, you know, with a finger, we thought was a little bit cumbersome. And then we also looked at the usability of doing that with a finger while holding it in another hand. And what we found is as the screen sizes get bigger too, it was just a lot more natural to use the stylus to annotate a photo and send it over to say like, hey, look who I met in LA this week. You know, and you put a picture of a movie star and you can write something on that photo. You know, something like that we find is really interesting. And especially if you look at even like the growth of like Snapchat and placing stickers on some of your posts. All of that, the finer editing of that is so much easier when you have the stylus to do it. And so if you look at the productivity, the creativity, and now you've got the social aspect, it just seemed like this was the right time, whether it be a greater appreciation for having a stylus in that mid-range smartphone device.
The follow-up to that is, there's a lot of, I guess there's a bit of education, right? People understand what a stylus can do. They understand that it enables drawing, but from a feature perspective, you do have an overlay where, you know, you can see what is possible right away after you take out the stylus. There's a note app, you can annotate screenshots and things like that. How do you decide from a software perspective what to focus on? Obviously, you know, you mentioned the much more expensive competitor. I mean, the Galaxy Note series is $1,000. This is clearly, you know, less than half of that. How do you make sure that you're giving people the kinds of software features that they expect from a stylus and keep them wanting to use it? Because I think that's one of the concerns that a lot of people have with a phone like the Galaxy Note is that it's just a feature that you use every once in a while and then you forget it exists.
Yeah, so you're right. When we did our stylus, it was more than just putting a stylus into a device. So there's been a lot of consumer research we did, and including, you know, bringing users in and trying out different styluses. Like, we do a blast finish on it so that it's easier to hold in hand. We looked at the design of it, the weight of it, to make sure that it was very ergonomical and comfortable so that the user is going to want to keep on using that stylus rather than use it once and say it's something like a gimmick. And then beyond that, though, so we made sure that when you take the stylus out of the device, you do get this floating window, and you can quickly access then up to 5 applications. We preload that window with 3, but it's fully customizable by the user. And so obviously, you know, one of the great things about having a stylus, if you think about it, if you're a student in the classroom, going to a seminar, is just taking notes. I mean, that's one of the, you know, the most useful applications of the stylus, and that you can get that fine granularity by just quickly writing without having to, use your finger and then, or try to use a keyboard really quick where you might not be able to keep up. So what we've done with that, with the Moto Note, is that we have this nice little tutorial about how to use it. You could do a lot of different customizations with it. For example, if you're an engineering student, you could put a grid background. If you're just taking notes, you can put kind of that the college rule type of paper as a backdrop for that. And then you could save those. Another thing we've found, though, is that, like I said earlier, with just annotating photos and marking them up and putting kind of your feelings and thoughts on it. So we do allow that, as well as even screen snapshot is one of the things in there. So you can take a snapshot of your screen and quickly overlay notes on there as well. And then just we try to keep providing value to the consumer with the stylus as well. So even when your screen is off and it's a lock screen, you can allow it to basically take notes in that lock screen mode. And that plays into our rich heritage and the past features we had of the Moto Display feature. So definitely with the stylus, we're making sure that we hit the ergonomics of it, that we hit the utility of it. And then as well as we have little reminders in there as well. So if you remove the stylus, you have to pop up the floating toolbar on the device. And if you forget to put the stylus back in, it'll set a reminder as well. And it also records the GPS location the last time the stylus was removed, so you don't lose your stylus as well. So you can continue to keep enjoying that. Beyond that, though, I think once you get into the habits of, like, say, taking a note, or once you just find that it's so easy to use to mark up a photo that you're going to share on Instagram, we believe that experience would be conducive to always wanting to come back and do that again. And then for us, it's all about providing those options to the user, providing some flexibility, some customization to allow them to do, you know, different annotations with it. We even have little shortcuts in there. Like if you take two fingers and swipe it horizontal, it'll erase that screen. So we're looking at that, and it's and you know, and I would say that with the launch of our project, this product, the Moto G Stylus, we are continuing to look to innovate that stylus use cases and make sure that we're forward looking in use cases to come, and perhaps we'll provide future functionality for that as well.
Very cool.
Yeah, and that sort of leads me into the next train of thought here, because it's obvious listening to what you just said that, you know, a lot of time and thought went into developing the stylus for the Moto G Stylus. But if you look outside of the US, you've got, you know, a full regular Moto G8 lineup with the G8, G8 Plus, G8 Play, and the G8 Power and G8 Power Lite. So I'm just wondering what the thought process was for, you know, why do we keep the G8 line in these other countries and not bring them over to the US? And similarly, you know, if so much of this research went into the stylus and you're seeing that, you know, now is the time to bring this into the Moto G phone, why is that kind of being limited to the US and not expanded to these markets where you have so many of these other G8 phones hitting the market there?
Yeah, sure. So one thing I guess is important to mention is that when we do all of our portfolio planning, although we're given flexibility for each region, we meet a lot as a team. So I'm, you know, intimately familiar with all those products, and a lot of times we platform off those products as well. But the overarching theme, and where there's some discretion given as far as what features we bring to each region, is that we do some serious research on consumer behavior and consumer needs. For example, the Moto G Stylus, the stylus is a nice addition to it, but even more than that, a lot of our consumer research we found is that consumers want more storage space. Consumers want stereo audio, and another thing is, you know, wants better imaging, a better imaging experience. Pardon me. And so, when we come up with that, we come up with a list of specifications we start looking at to solve the consumer need, and then we put this in the device. Now, what I define in this region, of course, this is available to see to other regions as well. But each region by region is given some discretion as far as what are the features they feel will best suit their consumers in that market. And for us in North America, we just really felt strongly that this was the time for the stylus. And then we'll see how the success for the product goes. And, you know, I'm pretty confident that we hit the right recipe on the set of features on this device. So maybe in the future, you might see it in other regions as well.
How do you see the budget market playing out in the next couple of years? I think we're seeing this real duality sort of come to fruition, where you have phones from companies like Motorola and Nokia in North America and Europe, and you have phones like, you know, from companies like Realme and Redmi and in India that are competing for that, you know, $100 to $300-$400 space. And then on the complete opposite side, we have the $1,000+ flagships. There doesn't seem to be a whole lot in that middle. At least there's a bit of a gap at the moment. How do you see that playing out over time? And you know, knowing that the bill of materials is getting higher on average for most smartphones, how do you keep hitting that $250 to $300 price point without sacrificing too much in terms of specs?
Yeah, that's a good, I mean, it's something that we grapple with every day, as a matter of fact. But, you know, so overall, if you look at what's happening with the mid-tier, obviously with 5G coming out, and mostly it's been dominating the higher-tier flagship line or premium segment smartphones, it's putting a little bit of downward pressure, I think, in the U.S., especially this year and continuing to 2021. It's going to put pressure on the value-tier line as well. And the interesting thing about it is that obviously some 5G technology costs more, but I could see in the future where we try to really democratize that 5G and try to make that available to more consumers as well, and that's how you continue to provide value in that mid-tier lineup. Now, as far as hitting those price points, there are some components where over time, just having you know, diversity of suppliers helps you to lower some cost in the components. So that's one factor we have, or some leverage to basically to be able to give such a great value for consumers. And then it's also looking at at the end of the day, it's trying to solve those consumer pain points. And that's what really tries to guide us. If you look at our portfolio, the Moto G Power, the Moto Stylus, and if you look generation over generation, we try to really go strong on that battery life claim for us, because we know that's like a number one consumer pain point. So definitely we try to innovate by bringing in, like, again, some of those very flagship type features at a lower price point, but also make sure we always have the consumer in mind that we're solving their basic needs and basic pain points, that, you know, maybe there's not a charger, they forgot to charge their phone last night and they don't have a charger on them, to make sure the phones could last more than one day. So we do try to balance the two, but definitely over the next 3 years, I think the mid-tier obviously has some of the greatest opportunity, because 5G first launched just about a year ago today with the Moto G, the Moto 5G mod on April 3rd. So, and then now we're starting to see more flagship devices from other OEMs out there. There's a lot of talk about how that's going to come down from flagship into the premium tiers. And then, of course, you definitely could see in at least a year or two where that starts to come into the mid-tier and the value tier line as well. So now it's managing consumer expectations of, hey, I want great battery life with fast data speeds. And now what am I going to do with that data speeds? And then really trying to create that great display experience and everything else for the consumers so that they have a really enjoyable experience in their phone. Another thought process too, and how you keep like innovating and defining value for consumers, is continually try to push that envelope on how the device looks, that perceived quality. You know, just because you're buying a phone that maybe is less than $300, it doesn't have to look like it. It looks like a very premium, what we call CMF, which is the color, material, and finish of the device. And so we continuously try to push the envelope there as well. But there are some innovations out there as well. I mean, there's one of the things you're seeing is the number of image sensors going into devices. It was 1, 2, now it's 3 and 4. For example, in our Moto G Stylus, we have 3 image sensors, but then there's others will have 4. But you could actually dual purpose one sensor to also give you depth information. So you actually don't need that. And instead of the 4 sensor, we decided to put a time of flight. So again, the time of flight sensor, which provides like a laser autofocus, we're trying to continuously push value and differentiate ourselves from our competitors by doing innovation where it's really meaningful to the consumer.
Yeah. And with the Moto G phones, I mean, consistently year after year, they tend to be some of the ones that are just the easiest to recommend, because it's under $300 or it's $250, and it's just a good basic all around Android phone that does what you need it to do, and it maintains that sweet price point that a lot of people are comfortable with. But in the recent years, we've also had the Android or the Motorola One line of phones,
uh-huh.
Which was introduced with the original Motorola One that kind of had that focus on the Android One software.
Right.
And then lately we've seen that shift towards like the Motorola One Action and the Hyper that have kind of taken that line of phones and focused more on kind of experimental camera features or camera features we didn't see initially in a Moto G.
Uh-huh.
So when I look at it right now, that's how I kind of see it. It's Motorola One is where you see the camera innovations, and Moto G is just the catch-all overall solid budget phone. Is that the way that Motorola looks at it, or is there a different differentiation between those two camps of devices?
Well, you're right in the fact that the Motorola One franchise, it's always been built around the theme of like expect the unexpected. And it's also been our opportunity to reach out to maybe demographics that weren't currently buying the Moto G, which the buyers tend to be a little bit younger. And then we look at male, female, and you know, what other groups can we reach out to with different device offerings? And so the Motorola One, you're spot on, and is we try to really bring some quick innovations to that. Those devices are very much so pure Android with the Motorola experiences built on, but not meant to hinder in any way. But, you know, those devices have been the first to come out with like the 21:9 display aspect ratio, or by, you know, the pop-up cameras, or by the wide-angle action camera that we had in the Motorola One Action. So we started to introduce them into the U.S. We take some of the offerings globally, and we've offered them on retail channels. But then with the Motorola One Action, we've actually made sure it supported the banding for all the Tier 1 U.S. carriers to make sure that it was, the consumers can enjoy it on all of them. And so that it's taught us a couple things. And we try to push that innovation down into the Moto G tier. Now, some of that innovation you're going to see, for example, one of the big things on there is like on the Motorola One Action we had where it would you could film in wide angle and you could hold the phone in portrait landscape mode. And when it played back, it would play back still and it would capture that full landscape wide angle. And so we actually decided that that's a great feature. And we picked that feature when we're defining the product for the Moto G Stylus. So the third camera in there is not just a wide angle, but it's a wide angle action camera. And so that came directly from that Motorola One line. And so the Motorola One line, it really is like that expect the unexpected. It's really pushing the boundary and to figure out like what new features can we give and let's test it out in the market and see how it does. And maybe that'll decide if we then putting into other products, which maybe aren't sold just through retail, but sold through the carrier lineup. And it's been a great device for catching on some of those early innovations and then making our Moto G portfolio even more solid as it inherits some of those features.
And then when you, just like to quickly follow up for that too, when you launched the original Motorola One, because like that kind of differs from the Action and the Hyper because that was sort of a meat and potatoes Android phone where the big draw to that was Android One with the guaranteed security patches and software updates that Google bundles in with that.
Uh-huh.
So when you released that, was the idea always to kind of shift towards we're going to do cameras and kind of drop the Android One side of things for some of the US models so the software is more consistent and in line with the G8 devices? Or is that just kind of a decision later on down the road where you saw that, you know, innovating with these camera things was more of a popular trend with most customers as opposed to the Android One program that more than likely only people that read websites like Android Central and are really ingrained in the whole Android ecosystem are going to, you know, really care about?
Yeah, and so it's a good point, too, is that it's not just defined by hardware, it's also by software as well. And so when we started that Motorola One franchise, really, it was starting with a blank canvas and starting, and those first early innovations were with Android One, but later on it did turn into a lot of different screen and camera innovations. But, I mean, regardless of that, one thing that it's taught us is that, you know, we used to do only quarterly updates, for example, on our Moto G and other devices. But we support bi-monthly security updates on all our devices now. And we do that for up to 2 years. So some of the some elements of that Android One we decided to keep. But for us, the innovation wasn't so much just having that pure Android One because there are some Motorola experiences we wanted to layer on top of that. You know, we've had a very close collaboration with Google over the years. In fact, donating some of our innovation ideas, they've made their way into the Android ecosystem. And we like to always showcase the best of Android to have that pure Android experience, but just with those layered motor experiences on. But there are certain features just like the twist to capture on the device or the chop-chop to launch the flashlight. And now with our new devices, we have Motorola Game Time as well because we see that consumers are playing 8 to 10 hours of games on device. And so we always are looking at how do we solve consumer pain points when they're, you know, playing some of these games. Like sometimes you get a call and it interrupts it or something like that. So we have these new Motorola experiences on there. So the innovation has, I guess, just shifted. But it was never that the Motorola devices would always be Android One. It was just looking at how do we bring innovation quickly to the market. And it just happened to fit that original Motorola One device, mirroring that with Android One. But For us, it was just more about how do we do some other things with it. You know, like I said, testing out the 21:9 display was huge for us because form factors like that, once we know the consumers would like it, the content, you know, from multiple different streaming sources fit it, then all of a sudden, you know, we chose, for example, the 21:9 display aspect ratio to put even in our Razer device.
I will get to the Razer in a sec, but I want to ask a little bit about the software update status, I guess. You know, we've spoken, I've spoken to you before at some events about this, and you know, I want to be clear, we recommend Motorola phones to people because they are great experiences, but they are really great experiences when you buy them, and then there's a bit of a, you know, there's sort of this ongoing, you know, question of whether they will be consistently updated. You did mention that you've changed the policy, I guess, for most phones to get updated bi-monthly, which is great, but we still see Motorola phones updated to new platforms, you know, well after other manufacturers do the same in some cases. How does Motorola see platform versus software updates right now, given that, you know, Android isn't changing all that much from platform to platform update? And how has that shifted over the last couple of years?
It's an interesting question, too, because obviously in the past we did have, you know, it depends on the product. There's been multiple OS upgrades, and there was a lot of churn in Android where maybe it was necessary to do so. But, I mean, our Moto G franchise typically gets one OS upgrade. But more so than that, you're seeing a lot more applications from the phone being put on the Play Store. And you're also seeing a lot of GMS apps that are able to update, you know, quite honestly, they can update monthly on the Play Store, or, I mean, you don't want to update them too often, but you're seeing things such as like the dialer, your main components of the phones, things that, such as our Motorola camera experience. All of that is on the Play Store and update out of, you know, more frequently than just one OS upgrade. So we didn't feel anymore. I mean, it's come to a pivotal point in the Android OS where so much is updatable on the store itself. Why batch everything together and do one OS upgrade when you can keep, you know, improving these experiences when you need it to the consumers? And you also get that really immediate consumer feedback so you can correct, and then if you need to send another update, you can. I mean, things, for example, with the Motorola camera, and there's some of the Moto experiences, they're all on the Play Store as well. I mean, we constantly look at like the user ratings and all those apps, and we look at all the consumer feedback. If we see something's wrong, then we can immediately address that. And so I think there's been a mindset shift within Motorola to say, hey, this is not just rely on the next big, lettered or I guess now numbered OS upgrade anymore. Let's look at how do we satisfy consumers quicker. And so we do that through those Play Store updates. And we've got other notifications like, you know, we get NPS scores for consumers on our devices. If we see that someone's having a problem with something, we can send tips to them immediately on how to use the phone. So we feel that, you know, the Play Store really has taken off, and some of the things that Google has put in with the Project Treble in the past and other items, it's become even quicker to really update the device applications and what matters most to the consumers much more frequently than just, say, a major OS upgrade.
But you understand how some people may still see that it's not a satisfying explanation, right? Like people, for better or worse, people still see the, you know, a platform update as the ideal situation. And it's perpetuated to some extent by Google, who promises 3 years of platform updates and 3 years for most of its new phones, and then 3 years of security patches. You know, it's a commodity to some extent, but it's an important one. How do you change the conversation? I mean, your explanation makes sense to me, and I'm sure our listeners will see that you get updates to the dialer and all the other things on the Play Store on a regular basis. But how do you shift that conversation to what you're trying to actually get across, at least to the public who may not know any better?
Yeah, and then, I mean, even the 2 years. So, I mean, what we're seeing is we look at a lot of different factors, to be honest, and it's not something that's static. It's something that maybe we change in the future. But, I mean, the biggest things we look at, obviously, is users' privacy and security. And, you know, and I said bi-monthly, if we see something that's out there that's hot, you know, that's a big, you know, breach in security or something, we're going to patch, obviously, sooner than that. But, you know, North America is dominated still, like 90% of sales are through channel. So through your major carriers and your regional carriers. And so we work closely with them as well to make sure that we update that. But, you know, I guess for those consumers, I mean, we are providing that experience. We know the life of ownership of a device. And so, you know, we just felt 2 years is a good duration for the security updates. And the OS upgrade, we just really strongly feel that the one OS upgrade, along with constantly updating all the other apps, and if you look at it, the number of apps that can be updated on the Play Store itself, it keeps growing. Whether it's the dialer, it goes to the camera, whether it's some of the UI, and there's a lot of other pieces on there, you know, messaging, et cetera, that they keep growing, and each year you're seeing more and more parts of the device on the Play Store. And for us, having that engagement model, we feel is a lot, it's easier to do, because obviously when you do major OS upgrades, there's a lot of certification you have to redo. And some of that certification itself can be delayed for the consumer. So going through this Play Store, we believe, is going to be more satisfying for us to solve those consumer pain points. And I know that there's, you know, Android, obviously, it's a 10th, 11th release here. There's been a lot of history with the OS upgrades, but I think that's going to shift coming up as we see, like I said, more applications being able to update through the Play Store itself seamlessly. So I don't feel that it's going to become a major consumer backlash having fewer OS upgrades. And of course, there's different, you know, views on this, but I mean, to solve our consumers' best, we know that we're always able to do those upgrades. And more importantly than that, even if we find that there's something wrong with the device, again, and we need an actual over-the-air upgrade to the device, we will push a maintenance release to the device as well. So, you know, and all those are closely coordinating with our Cure channel partners as well.
Yeah, it is fun to talk about just as people that are ingrained in the whole Android world and ecosystem. But, you know, if my mom or my grandma has a Moto G7, and I know she's not going to care if she gets, you know, Android 11 or any of these things. But, you know, moving away from software, we mentioned it earlier before, the Razer is one of those things that, you know, techies and general consumers can look at. And it's like, this is a very different phone from what Motorola, like the Moto G phones, and the Moto Zs and the other phones in the lineup. Folding phones are, you know, we kind of saw them in 2019 start to emerge, and 2020 is the year where we've gotten the Galaxy Z Flip and the Moto Razr, and those have kind of been coming into their own. What was it like launching, you know, the first folding phone from Motorola? What was that process like? And, you know, what did you learn from that launch? And has any of that informed what you might do down the road with potentially other future foldable projects?
Yeah, so Motorola is heavily invested into the whole foldable phone because we believe, again, when we look at how to solve consumer pain points, one of the pain points are that the screen sizes keep increasing, right? So, I mean, a few years back, a 5.5-inch display would have been perfectly fine with everyone. Now, you know, you're seeing them push the boundaries of the 6.4, 6.7, you know, as you see new releases of devices. And so pocketability is becoming a big concern on devices, and how do we store those? But more than that, too, it's also that status shopper wants some differentiation. If you look at all phones today, I mean, the candy bar form factor is just so dominant. And if you look at where the smartphone or in the cell phone market were, you know, even if you look back like 15 years ago or 20 years ago, I mean, look at all the sliders, the clamshells, all the different form factors you had for people depending on what, you know, they liked best. And so we do want to give that consumer choice again. And with the Razr franchise, I mean, that really allowed us to do that pocketability, to make sure that we came up with just a really awesome form factor that you can, you know, throw in your pocket or throw in your purse, and to make sure that you have this slim phone without sacrificing any of the modern conveniences. So for us, it was very exciting. And some of the lessons we learned, obviously, unfortunately for us, coming out of the gate, you know, some of the brand new technology, it was a little slow to start, and it was slow to make sure that we had a very good durable display, that we could produce enough of the quantity of the devices. And so I think we're learning some of that in manufacturing and how to offer, you know, larger quantities at launch as well. Because obviously, Motorola, you know, we had some supply problems at the beginning. So those are the main things we worked out. As far as the formula and the overall design, I think everyone in the company is extremely pleased with that end result of the device.
And I mean, I know you can't really talk about future plans, but what do you think about other designs for foldables? I mean, we saw teardowns of the Razr. It's an extremely intricate device, right? Like there's so many little components that go into the hinge and just making everything work together. Having a larger canvas would obviously make it easier from an engineering perspective. You know, can you talk at all to what you think of larger foldable factors and whether that's whether you can take any of that learning and apply them to, you know, to something a little bit different?
Yeah. I could talk about some of so one thing, I mean, obviously there's some industrial trends, and where we see foldable going is obviously, you know, there's, you know, as network technology improves, as we're seeing 5G, faster data speeds, you could see in the future where these things converge together. So that's something obviously we're pursuing as well, and looking into how do we merge new technologies into foldable and perhaps future products. But as far as the intricacy of the hinge and everything else, I mean, we never stop at designing and learning and refining. So it's a very iterative process with Motorola engineering team. Obviously, we want to provide that best product out there, and so we're were, you know, heavily vested and looking into different technologies, different displays and everything else. And I'll have to say that even before we decided on that screen size for the Razr, you know, obviously you produce a lot of Z core models and things like that. We look at those different sizes and we do a lot of consumer research and we say, okay, what fits good in your hand? What fits good in your pocket? And you keep in it and you look at the thickness and there's so many things that play out there. But obviously when you're trying to produce this device that is truly an elegant design, it's just got to feel very refined and very comfortable in the hand and in the pocket. And so there was a lot of debate internally, do we make this device wider or not? And ultimately, we decided, no, it's got, it, you know, the number one thing is it's got to be very portable and pocketable. And so we looked at different width options, and that's how we actually honed in on the display size we did, is just because we tried out different, you know, obviously you can go with a 6.5 or something else, but we wanted to make sure that, you know, the Z, the Y, the X, all the different dimensions of the device were perfectly tuned so that you can just throw this in your pocket or into a small bag. And so now as we go forward, obviously, there's so much that it's going to be acceptable to devices. What you don't want is a foldable device that grows just as big as a candy bar phone, because then you kind of defeat the purpose of that. So I think what we're challenged with is, how do we look at, you know, further minimizing borders to grow a screen? How do we look at new, you know, different technology and miniaturization, whether it's with battery life or with antennas? How do we look at, you know, how to make sure we get the right imaging experience, the right audio experience? So we're continuing to innovate in those areas to make sure we've got that right mix. But regardless of all that, I mean, at the end of the day, it's all going to be about the product design. I mean, for the Razr franchise, it's all about just having that very elegant design that really attracts that status shopper that just wants to be seen and has something different. And it has to fit that persona. So for us, I mean, all these innovations, they won't work with the device unless we can get to that, you know, that end game.
All right. So when will we see the Razr 2? No, I'm joking. I know you can't answer that. But seriously, I'm really excited about it. Okay. I know you are short on time, but I want to ask you one last question. What are you doing right now? What are the things that you're doing at home to stay sane? Anything interesting or fun that you do, either, you know, just to keep your mind occupied, or anything that you really got back into because you've been spending so much time at home?
You know, it's funny you ask that because there's a couple things. You know, one thing I found is that, you know, Words with Friends, I used to have that game on years ago and I just forgot about it. But as you're doing this social isolation now, I think it's increasingly important, you know, to reach out and to play these social games. And so, like, we've downloaded this again and we play with family and friends. A couple other things is, like, you know, there's these fun games like Psych, I think it's by Ellen, on the Android Play Store. So we try to play that to try to, you know, keep the, you know, sometimes the mood lighter, despite all the, you know, negative news that comes out. So find just a lot of more social games. And, you know, and really looking at things like Duo and Hangouts, I mean, I've used them more than I think I've ever have, just to try to still feel connected and reach out to friends and family. And so it's funny how important some of these technologies showcase themselves when you're in situations like this. So other than that, yeah, it's been, for me, I've had a lot more time to catch up on good reads, and I've been reading a lot more on different technology trends and stuff, and things I've always wanted to, but just never had enough time to do. So now there's plenty of time, so.
Yeah, you seem like you're one of the people who are trying to stay productive and add to your knowledge as opposed to just watching a lot of Netflix like I'm doing. So good for you.
Oh yeah, I, you know, I have to admit, I mean, yeah, I, you know, I'm caught up in the whole Tiger King, you know, sweep like everyone else. So.
All right. Well, last question then: did Carol Baskin do it?
Oh, geez. Personally, I think so, but.
All right. Well, that is the correct answer. All right. Doug, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure having you. And, you know, I've been really enjoying using the new Motorola or the Moto G phones. I'm sure Joe, you know, would say the same, and just appreciate your time. Thanks again.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Daniel and Joe as well.